A Tempo is a production of the Classical Network and is made possible by the support of listeners like you. Thank you for your support. Welcome to A Tempo, the Classical Network spotlight on the arts and culture. I'm Rachel Katz, and I'm your host as we explore the changes at work in the performing arts. Each week, I'll bring you some of the latest news and also take time to examine many of the issues that are challenging arts organizations and institutions. Today, we'll visit Philadelphia for the groundbreaking of BalletX's Center for World Premiere Choreography. The building will provide rehearsal and administrative space, as well as a venue through which BalletX can continue to expand its school and community programs, and I'll speak with Executive and Artistic Director Christine Cox. And with Nutcracker season about to open, we'll hear from some of the other ballet companies in the region about their plans to bring this beloved tradition to their audiences this season. As part of A Tempo, we're pleased to bring you some of the news from around the world of the performing arts. The Philadelphia Orchestra has announced that Vice Presidents Ryan Fleur and Matthew Loden will serve as interim co-presidents while it searches for a successor to CEO and President Alison Vollgemoor. Vollgemoor, who guided the orchestra through bankruptcy from 2011 to 2012, is scheduled to depart at the end of the year. Both Fleur and Loden joined the orchestra in 2012. In its statement, the orchestra said its board has hired the firm Isaacson Miller to assist with the search. In other executive news, the Los Angeles Philharmonic said it has chosen Simon Woods as its new chief executive, succeeding Deborah Borda, who left earlier this year to head up the New York Philharmonic. Currently president and CEO of the Seattle Symphony Orchestra, Woods will begin his tenure with the LA Philharmonic in January, which will include overseeing the orchestra's 100th anniversary celebration and the creation of a new home for its YOLA Youth Initiative, launched under Borda's leadership. In Seattle, he started an in-house recording label that has garnered 3 Grammy Awards and 23 nominations, and spearheaded Simple Gifts, which partners with area social service organizations that work with the homeless. Previously, Woods served as chief executive for the Royal Scottish Orchestra and the New Jersey Symphony Orchestra, and he was also a past vice president of artistic planning and operations at the Philadelphia Orchestra. And the loss of newspaper-based art critics continues with the announcement that David Patrick Stearns will be leaving the Philadelphia Inquirer early next month. In his blog, Condemned to Music, on artsjournal.com, Stearns announced he had taken a buyout from the company. Stern said he will continue to freelance for The Inquirer, as well as for several other media outlets. Fellow arts writer Peter Dobrin will remain at the paper. Those are just some of the headlines this week from around the arts world. This past week, BalletX, a contemporary ballet company, celebrated the groundbreaking of its planned Center for World Premiere Choreography, which it envisions not just as a location for rehearsals and choreographic development, but also for the surrounding community to come together and enjoy and participate in dance. Previously, BalletX had relied on rented space for its rehearsal studios and offices in different locations around Philadelphia. Scheduled to open in late winter, the new center is located in a large warehouse-like building in South Philadelphia that in the past has served as an auto repair shop and furniture store. After the renovation, the 5,000-square-foot center will house a studio that can be split into 2 studios as needed, and also office space. Looking out to the community, the ballet company plans to open some of its rehearsals to the public and create after-school programs for students, building on its dance exchange program, which currently brings dancers into public schools to share the joys of dance with students and allow them to tap into their own artistic creativity.
After 12 years, we are finally bringing our artistic, educational, and administrative efforts under one roof to deepen our impact here in Philadelphia. And boy, do we mean deepen our impact. We are going to come in, and we are ready to share our love for dance. And let me tell you, we love to dance at BalletX.
Speaking of the groundbreaking, co-founder and artistic and executive director Christine Cox said that as part of its efforts to support the development of new works, BalletX plans to commission 40 world premieres by 25 choreographers over the next decade. I spoke with Cox after the ceremony about her vision for the center.
I envision this as, you know, I keep seeing a tree and I see these roots that go down and down, and I feel as if we're coming out of the flower pot and going into the earth. I see this as a vibrant dance space that is very inclusive, and the community really wants to see what's happening here. I see it as a place where we really start to grow our audience and find more people to fall in love with the art form. You know, with dance, there's a lot of convincing people, you know, to come to the theater. You know, we really have to break down the barriers, you know, of years and years and years of preconceived notions of what it is. And, you know, forming this company was about breaking down those walls and making it more accessible and making it current. And that's what we do. We do all new work. So right there, it's contemporary. So, and then making it, in it being contemporary, accessible. You know, that's so important to me. It's not about elite. It's about coming together.
And how do you see BalletX interacting directly with the surrounding community?
We're going to look to have a regular open rehearsal that we communicate with the neighbors to invite them in. We certainly want to have the community feel like we're very much a part of what's going on, and we're a great addition. So we'll start by that. We're in 3 public schools, our school program. One of them happens to be 4 blocks away. So creating an after-school opportunity for those kids to learn and continue their learning with us here is another opportunity. And then connecting in through their parents. So really, you know, we have a community around us, and then deepening our impact with them and how we engage with them. So that's what we're working on over the next 3 years, starting with our closest community, our partners here in the neighborhood, and then our school partners.
Looking at the school program just for a moment, how have you seen that grow? And in particular, how have you seen that succeeding in terms of what you see from the students?
It's profound. It's profound. It's a 4-year program that we started just out of an idea to teach students how to dance and dancers how to teach. So I love the full circle effect of it. And what I've seen is that parents come up to me and say, I didn't know that my kid loved dancing. And now when we get home, they're dancing for me and asking to perform for me. And so now my son, who's in 3rd grade, is doing the program at Greenfield. And so watching him experience it and is just magnificent. And, you know, 4 years ago when he saw it, when he was in kindergarten, he said, oh, I wish I was in 3rd grade so that I could do this. And so it's just, it's full circle for me, the experience. And I really am grateful that we push to do the program, because it really is important that we give back not only to our community, but to our kids.
Now, one other element of this is that it does give you more or less a permanent home. How is that going to change your possibilities? How does that change the way you're able to plan and work towards the future?
Yeah. It gives us a ton more leverage in the sense that we can actually design a future, you know, that is so much more impactful. So, for instance, the choreographers we bring in, we can bring them in longer. We can bring them in. We can look at having residencies with them here, creating workshops that they can, you know, show their skill and share it with our dance community. And with sharing with the dance community, we then can invite the outside community to watch that process. So it the layers and layers, it's like dropping a pebble and then the ripple effect that happens. When we plant our roots here, the ripple effect that happens, you know, it does feel like sky's the limit. You know, obviously there's a lot of fundraising that goes into making that possible, but I am up for the challenge and have a tremendous board and support in our community to, I believe, to make it happen. I hope so, at least.
Speaking of fundraising, what is the overall estimate for what you need to raise? And how, in particular, are you reaching out to donors and other possible sponsors to get that support?
So we're on a very active campaign to fundraise. We've put a $2 million goal to raise the capital and 3-year sustainability. We're halfway there. And there's lots of opportunities to make a big imprint on this company. And what I've found is that the folks that I've met with have been extremely generous and excited about this opportunity. They've seen the hard work that we've put into building this organization and where we've focused our attention, and they understand the need and they appreciate our intention.
That was BalletX Executive and Artistic Director Christine Cox, who co-founded the company in 2005. The new center is also being welcomed by the city, which sees it as a way to provide new opportunities for the surrounding neighborhoods. Kelly Lee is the city's chief cultural officer.
It used to be a very commercial neighborhood, but now with all the gentrification that's happening in every neighborhood of Philadelphia, you sort of have a strong Vietnamese community that lives here. You have a large African-American community that lives here, and now both neighborhoods are sort of being gentrified. Progress is good, but what's wonderful about having like BalletX sort of right here, like in the middle of these two communities, is that it's a common ground, like literally, like bringing, you know, the arts bringing two communities together. And they are so good at doing community engagement and doing work in the community. They are going to be such an asset here. And just to have a space for performances, they're going to do a lot of community-based programming here. And so I think they're going to introduce a large new community to dance that otherwise did not have access or probably even knew that BalletX existed. And now they will be neighbors. They will become, you know, in and out of here because they want to be a hub in this community. And I can't be happier for this community or for BalletX.
There are certainly so many plans, potential plans. Is there anything specific that the city's been talking about with them?
No, I mean, we are open to partnering with them. Like our office, the Office of Arts and Culture, we really try to provide access to people who otherwise could not have access. So whether or not we're subsidizing tickets, whether or not, and what we do currently with BalletX is that we work with them to do performances in other neighborhoods and communities where people live. And we've been working with BalletX to do that on an ongoing basis. What's really exciting once this space opens is how can we bring other communities here? So it's just expanding and probably just taking it to the next level. So we're very excited.
Now, they've been very active with their dance exchange program in the public schools. What role does that particular program play in terms of keeping arts in the schools?
Well, BalletX, like a lot of our arts organizations, are really strong community partners. You know, some of the arts, you know, with funding, you know, there goes a lot of the arts in some of our public schools. But our arts organizations, BalletX is a perfect example, they have stepped up, you know, to sort of offer programmings in the schools and offering programs at their facilities. And I think the more arts organizations do this, I think that all of our kids will benefit. Like the impact of arts on kids in terms of education, quality of life, getting confidence if they are a performer themselves, it's not measurable. It is measurable, but in a lot of ways, you can't put any sort of cap or limit to it. So we're just excited about the work that they're doing.
Now you mentioned that you're a subscription or a ticket holder for BalletX. How did you discover BalletX, and actually how did you discover ballet in the first place?
What brought you in?
I can't remember the first time I saw BalletX. I think I came with a friend of mine who was a subscriber, and she had an extra ticket. And, you know, I've never seen contemporary ballet before. I like ballet, but I was more of I took a lot of like dance as a kid. So sort of seeing it done at that level was unbelievable. And I've been being a subscriber or a single ticket owner, purchaser for years. And the quality of the work just never disappoints.
That was Kelly Lee, Chief Cultural Officer of the City of Philadelphia. BalletX opens its season Wednesday, November 29th with Niccolò Fonte's Beautiful Decay at the Wilma Theater, where it serves as resident dance company. Information on BalletX, including details on that and other productions in this year's season, can be found at balletx.org. With Thanksgiving upon us, productions of The Nutcracker can't be far behind. Year after year, this ballet has become a beloved American tradition. And no matter how many times it is staged, whether it's Balanchine or a different choreographer's take, a full-stage production, or a sensory-friendly version geared toward audiences with special needs, there's always a little special magic to each performance. I reached out to several ballet companies to find out what their plans are for their season, and we'll hear from them over the next few weeks. First up, Roxy Ballet, based in Lambertville, New Jersey. The curtain rises on its first performance at the College of New Jersey's Kendall Theater in Ewing, New Jersey, Saturday, November 25th, and its run through December 3rd includes a sensory-friendly production, December 2nd. Mark Roxy is founding director of Roxy Ballet, and he called the Nutcracker simply miraculous.
I still don't quite understand the phenomena, and I've been doing it for over 45 years. I've been involved in ballet for a long time, and Nutcracker, you know, Mr. Tchaikovsky did the most amazing score. I would say that the magic of it is still unknown. No one really knows why it has the magic that it does, why it has the magic it does at the box office. And I know a lot of people that are really, you know, they go, oh, not the Nutcracker. Oh, the Nutcracker. Oh, go see the Nutcracker. But what they don't realize is that the Nutcracker is the tradition, an American tradition at this point, but it also, inside of that production, there are hundreds, maybe even millions of young children that are introduced to the Nutcracker every single year around the world. So the production is an amazing way to introduce non-dance going people into the art form. And for that reason, this production should be honored and respected as an American tradition. I mean, it's phenomenal what it does for the arts, particularly the performing arts. But even beyond that, there isn't a year that goes by where I listen to the music and don't find magic, new things that I never heard, or new things that I didn't really know, rhythms and melodies that I didn't even know existed within the score. So I hear different things every single time I hear the music. So for me, it has magic on so many levels. And to watch the young dancers, aspiring professionals and, you know, entry-level young would-be future ballerinas participating in the production is truly, truly magical. And to sit back and observe that year after year, after 24 years, you just stand in awe at looking at what's going on and what Mr. Tchaikovsky did. It's really amazing. So I hope I answered that question, but it is a phenomenal, it's like the ninth wonder of the world, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, I can imagine, especially when you have a school directly attached to the ballet company, there must be a certain extra energy level and excitement that kind of ripples through as you get to this time. What do you see from the students who are getting ready to participate?
Well, again, you know, if you were to gauge a child's participation and a child's love and interest for the art form in general, much of it is attributed to their first introductory, either as an audience member or as a participant in the production of The Nutcracker, because it introduces children to dance performance and what it is like to be on stage with, you know, world-class professional dancers. And being around that environment is a wonderful life lesson for them. And oftentimes, they start out at 3 years old, and they graduate doing the Nutcracker, and they go out into the world doing the Nutcracker, or being a volunteer, or participating in, you know, another production, or even bringing their children back to be involved in the production because they understand what it does. It encapsulates childhood memories, you know, everything that's good. We talk about the sugar plum dancing in your head, but the reality of it is that the memories that are generated from 15 years of participating in the Nutcracker as a young child really forms much of the identity of the children that are involved, and they go out into the world with these incredible childhood memories. So you hear that and you see it, and every year that, you know, the halls are stacked with auditionees, and they don't just come from our school. We invite children to come to audition for our production from other schools from throughout the region. So it's not just children from the Mill Ballet School that are eligible to participate in the production. So from that point, it's really a great opportunity for us to do outreach to other dancers and offer value to what they're learning as well in the region by being connected to a a fully professional dance company.
You mentioned just the opportunity to introduce new people to dance. And one thing that's become prevalent in the last few years are sensory-friendly productions. What is your sensory-friendly production going to be like? And what prompted the idea to start introducing those?
The Roxy Ballet and Melissa and I, we've been involved in the field of bringing the arts to people with disabilities for at least 25 years, at least. And we've always been interested in trying to figure out a way to make the art form of dance accessible to people that otherwise would not be able to have full access to it. So this isn't new for us. I understand that there's a big push. There's been some really great work done by the New Jersey State Council on the Arts and the NEA and the you know, the National Endowment for the Arts, et cetera. And lots of groups. The Kennedy Center has really helped many organizations become ADA compliant and also even enhance their programs. So, you know, we're happy to be leading the charge in that. We've always done it. And for me, it's probably some of the most rewarding work that we have done and that we do year after year because, you know, again, the ballet has been prepared. The dancers have been trained. The production has been set. The curtain, you know, goes up. And what do we want? We want more people that otherwise would not come to dance performance to get up, get out, and get to see a dance performance for them. And so the sensory performance is primarily geared toward, you know, actually young children come to it because sometimes families don't want to subject other patrons to, you know, noise of their child if they're 3, 4, or 5 years old, but they want to bring them to a production to see the Nutcracker. So the sensory performance is great on that level. But we specifically have it as a relaxed performance because what we want to do is we want to make sure the lights aren't too intense in the audience. So we leave them up at half. We do other things by modifying the sound decibels of how loud the music is played. We remove all special effects from the production. And there's a whole host of other things that we do. We have a relaxed room, a room where people can go if it's overstimulating. We set up certain areas and we have different kinds of toys and activities that the kids can do while the production is going on. And so there's just so much that goes on with the sensory performance. And we have been modifying it. This is our second year doing the sensory performance of the Nutcracker, but we've been modifying our interactions with, you know, a variety of different types of disabilities, and specifically when it comes to autism and things like that. You know, there's a lot of information to still be learned about how to provide performances to people and make it accessible to everyone. And so that's what all of us should be doing. That's what all arts organizations should be doing, is figuring out ways to be inclusive and bring everybody to the table to enjoy art, dance, and the community, because that's where we gather.
One other way that you've brought in the community in both past presentations and then this production is by partnerships with other arts organizations. I understand you'll be having some guests from Princeton Pro Musica involved in this production. Tell us how that will work and what that grew out of.
The Princeton Pro Musica, as you know, is a another regional group. They're fantastic. Their music is beautiful, and they do a very, very special holiday concert that actually occurs, I believe it's 2 weeks after ours. And so it was born out of just trying to partner and just trying to create opportunities for other organizations through our own success. So here we are, we have this amazing production. How can we bring in other groups to participate with Roxy Ballet? And so that's how it started, with that idea. But what's happened is it's ended up being an amazing tradition, and the audience really, really looks forward to coming into the theater to the sounds of Princeton Pro Musica. And so when they walk in, they'll hear, you know, a variety of different carols and songs being sung for about 40 minutes prior to the show. And then they also come back again during the intermission and they do more performance. But there's other things that go on as well. There's a visit from the Jolly Elf and his beautiful bride. And there's lots of other fun things that happen throughout the production. There's opportunities to take photographs with the cast members and interact on a lot of different levels with some of the fun, larger-than-life characters that make their appearance in the audience. And it's really a great family event. It's a great way to just come out and know that, you know, you're going to have fun from the moment you get there till the moment you leave, and you'll be wanting more. And it's not a traditional any of the performances that Roxy Ballet. There's nothing, you know, traditional about what we do. It's always very, very handcrafted and thought about in ways that are very accessible to audiences. So you can guarantee that if you bring your family and you bring your kids, that the kids will just, they'll love the entire production, including Act Two, which sometimes in some productions that you might see, Act Two can sometimes be a little bit long and a little hard for young children to enjoy completely because of their attention spans. But we've built things into the production that hopefully fill the need for people to be stimulated. And I think that's probably one of the most unique attributes to our company.
Did you do the choreography?
I do all of the choreography for the Roxy Ballet. We do sometimes have different choreographers coming in to do productions, but it's most of the work that is being done here is, it's been done. I choreographed the Nutcracker, oh boy, at least 24 years ago. But, you know, I change it every year because I'm still alive. I suppose when I'm not around anymore, somebody else will kind of restage it the way it was and keep it as a museum piece of sorts. But right now I'm alive and I'm able to look at the material every year and change it and adapt it and tweak the variations and the solos. And so that the audience comes back year after year to see just, you know, they're like, oh, that's different. Oh, I never saw that. Oh, wow. And the same is true with the costumes. You know, the costumes is over $750,000 in, you know, costumes and sets. And it's just a beautiful spectacle to watch. It really is. The costumes are amazing.
That was Mark Roxy, founding director of Roxy Ballet. You can find their website at roxyballet.org, and that's spelled R-O-X-E-Y. Princeton-based American Repertory Ballet stages its first production November 18th at the Union Performing Arts Center with a sensory-friendly performance November 19th, before beginning its run at Princeton's MacArthur Theater November 24th. We'll hear from them and Philadelphia's Pennsylvania Ballet in the coming weeks. I hope you enjoy these conversations focusing on the changing dynamics and challenges in the arts world that I bring you each week on A Tempo. But remember that programs like this are made possible only through your support of this station. To become a member of the Classical Network, now celebrating 35 years on the air, go to wwfm.org and click on Donate. Thank you for being a member of the global listening community that is the Classical Network. Thank you for listening to A Tempo. I'm your host and producer, Rachel Katz. Join me again next week as we explore more issues and trends in the world of the performing arts. You can listen to past programs of A Tempo by going to our arts and cultural news page at wwfm.org or searching for A Tempo on our program page. A Tempo is a production of the Classical Network and is made possible by the support of listeners like you.